Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and I'm looking forward to talking with my guest here this week because we've been covering the sudden spreading rash of data centers happening in our state of Michigan and across the country. Kelly House, environmental reporter for the nonprofit and reliable news outlet known as Bridge Michigan, has written a slew of stories about how these big tech data centers are popping up across the state and causing controversy and opposition amongst many citizens in towns and townships where these centers are being built. Ms. House knows so many of the minute details behind this push, why it's happening, who in Lansing supports it, and also why utilities such as DTE and Consumers Energy are backing it. So Kelly House from Bridge Michigan will join me here in just a bit. And then, after our talk, I will have some further thoughts on the data center subject in this week's Last Call. Remember, you can always email the show, that's leftoflansing@gmail.com. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and give it a 5-star rating. Plus, Left of Lansing is on YouTube. Subscribe there as well and like the videos that we post there so that way you can help spread the progressive message throughout Michigan and the rest of the nation. Does it feel like we're getting overwhelmed and beaten over the head by an onslaught of negative news on a daily basis? I mean, news that, let's just face it, is disheartening, and I get it. It is overwhelming and disheartening, no doubt. For example, data from Feeding America, the Urban Institute, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics show that average grocery prices have climbed 37% since 2017. That's the equivalent of more than $250 in additional monthly expenses for a typical family of four. As of August, that family now spends around $1,030 per month on groceries. Now, that's according to Investors Observers, which also notes the data is consistent with findings from a recent Associated Press NORC Center poll, which reports that grocery costs have become the biggest source of financial stress for Americans. Then rent, healthcare, or student debt. Now, of course, this goes back starting in 2017 when Dear Leader was in office for the first time. We had the Biden years where we saw inflation spike significantly right after the pandemic, but the prices still are going up. Dear Leader Trump ran his entire campaign on lowering grocery prices, but all he's done is muse about, I don't know, how old-fashioned the word grocery sounds to him. It's so weird and senile in many ways. I mean, I guess they'll look at it this way. Why wouldn't he muse about how cute the word groceries really is to him? Because he never had to shop a day in his life for food, ever. And it reminds me of that scene in The Aviator when Howard Hughes is having dinner with actress Katharine Hepburn's rich family, and her mom tells him that they don't worry, that her family, they don't worry about things like money. And Hughes, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, responds, "Yes, ma'am, that's because you have it." I mean, why would any of these billionaire oligarchs that surround Trump care one bit about the price of groceries when they're busy making loads of cash for big tech bros, crypto bros, and for themselves? They don't care about you. If they did, do you really believe they'd hesitate to unveil the latest job numbers and unemployment rate numbers? If everything is happening as they promised many in the working class it would happen, why not tout the awesomeness of their regime? Why not? Now, Politico is reporting that the Trump regime's Labor Department will not release any jobs numbers for October, blaming it conveniently on the MAGA Republican government shutdown that ended last week. And the November jobs report will apparently be a bit late as well, not arriving until December 16th, just over a week away from Christmas. How convenient. Now, The Hill reports the government did release the latest weekly unemployment numbers. It says that more than 1.9 million Americans filed claims for unemployment benefits in mid-October, the highest mark since early August, according to data from the Department of Labor. Nobody is hiring. Now, this just is not working for the working class. The issue of affordability, which has been pressed by strong Democratic Socialist candidates and progressive Democratic candidates, that issue of affordability isn't going away, and it's frankly hurting the Trump regime, MAGA Republicans, and also establishment corporate Democrats. The working class is feeling squeezed in a number of areas, but affordability is one of the main culprits. I mean, why else did Dear Leader suddenly scrap his entire agenda, his entire argument over his insane tariff scheme and how it was going to bring in loads of prosperity as far as the eye could see? I mean, why did he suddenly scrap that awesome plan when he rolled back many of his tariffs this week on more than 200 food products, including coffee, beef, bananas, orange juice? It had to be done, everyone. It had to be done because, as predicted, his across-the-board tariff insanity was inflationary and further was harming the working class. And as the University of Michigan economist Justin Wolfers told CNN this week, while some of those items that I described might slowly dip in price in the coming week, the working class is still getting the shaft thanks to Dear Leader's tariffs and a number of other ways. Listen.
What's happening here is these are a particularly politically salient set of tariffs. And so he's hoping that the prices you watch most closely are the ones you see at the grocery store. It's not that they're going to come back down as of last Thursday, which is when he retroactively reduced the tariffs. But probably you'll see they're going to stop going up quite as fast. And maybe if you get a little bit lucky, someone will throw a sale in there as well. But what's not being talked about here is we spend a lot of money beyond just groceries. For instance, if you're a new house, you've got to furnish your house. The price of couches has gone way up. The price of TVs as well. That's all still tariffed. And so a lot of the rest of the cost of living pressures, they're not going away.
You think Dear Leader and his regime even dream about backpedaling from their so-called surefire economic scheme if Democrats didn't sweep those elections across the nation last week? Or that his numbers continue to tank? Legendary Chicago journalist and friend of this podcast, Jennifer Schulze, posted the following on Blue Sky saying, Trump has a 38% approval rating and Americans hate every single thing he's doing. He knows it. His minders know it. And we all know it. Yes, that's true. Jennifer made that statement because Trump said this week that he's been told this is the greatest 9 months the president has ever had in the history of presidenting. I mean, how can we in the working class truly believe he's working for us during the same week he invited Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to the White House, the People's House, the same house that Dear Leader's destroying so he can place a 90,000 square foot ballroom? Trump even defended MBS for his role in the murder of Washington Post writer Jamal Khashoggi in 2018. Trump attacked our press, the American press, for even trying to press MBS on Khashoggi's murder. I mean, MBS hadn't even been invited back to Washington, D.C. since the Biden administration found evidence that MBS ordered Khashoggi's killing. Yep, there's Dear Leader celebrating that MBS is giving the U.S. $1 trillion, which I'm sure will go towards the millions of Americans needing help with rising healthcare premiums, right? Right? No. And Trump also held a black tie dinner in honor of MBS. Who's leading who? America first. Oh, and this week, and this was beautiful, Dear Leader is promising to shell out some $2,000 to every American next year, thanks to what his tariffs have brought in. Yeah, oh, okay. But the very idea of handing tax money from corporations to the working class is scaring even some inside the regime. Listen to the regime's Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, kind of step back from this idea of giving working class Americans money.
Would a $2,000 tariff dividend check going to people be inflationary?
There are a lot of things that are going to happen next year.
Is that one of them?
And that could be one of them. And again, maybe we could persuade Americans to save that.
Oh, so working class Americans should just save that money because it would suddenly be inflationary. Okay. Audio courtesy of Fox News. I mean, MAGA Republicans have been touting that line forever, but yet you never hear them say similar sentiments when it comes to shelling out billions to corporations or rich elitists like Scott Bessent. No, never hear that. Only when it comes to the working class. The working class is getting screwed by these elites. And it's why the oligarchy needs to keep dividing us in order to keep their little game of redistributing our money back up to them. And we can't fall for it, everyone. We can't. We're smarter than that. We are smarter than that. The reason why anti-transgender grifters like MAGA Riley Gaines are bankrolled by MAGA mega donors is they need her to divide Americans over what? Over what? Over a problem that doesn't exist? And while they harass those who view transgender Americans with some compassion and as, you know, people, they ask, what is a woman? Yet, as we saw this past week, these same MAGA types were trying to blur the lines of what is really the age of consent and when does a girl actually become a woman. I mean, we saw it from Megyn Kelly, from Alan Dershowitz, where they tried to argue that maybe someone who's 16 or 17 shouldn't be considered young girls. I mean, they said that in defense of those rich and powerful political and financial elitists who were all part of the Jeffrey Epstein child sex trafficking ring. They were defending pedophilia, and they were trying to blur the lines of what is and is not a woman. Sick and grotesque. Has Riley Gaines ever said anything about it? I don't know. I haven't seen her say anything about it. And is she asking those same people who are defending those who were friends with Jeffrey Epstein? What is a woman? Of course, here in Michigan, we had a handful of MAGA Republican white Christian nationalists vote against a bill banning child marriage. I mean, people like State Representative Matt Maddock of Milford voted against the bill because to him, I guess letting men of power dominate a 16 or 17-year-old is just fine and dandy with him. Can't imagine that made the people of Milford real happy. How is that kind of stuff helping the working class or bringing the working class together? How? In Dearborn this week, a MAGA white supremacist named Jake Lang held an Islamophobic rally. He's a former January 6th rioter and insurrectionist, and he flew in from Florida to cause chaos in Dearborn because he views Dearborn as anti-American since it's got a high Arab-American population. He threatened and tried to burn a Quran and brought bacon to stuff in counter-protesters' faces. By the way, Dear Leader pardoned Jake Lang as part of his blanket pardon for all January 6th insurrectionists. And Jake Lang was praising Trump many times while in Dearborn. I mean, this is the same guy who beat cops during that insurrection. But back to blue, right, everyone? Right? Jake Lang prayed for God to remove Muslims while he was in Dearborn, and his goal there was to cause violence, and he was doing it all in the name of white supremacy, and he praised Trump at the same time. As the Detroit Metro Times' Steve Neeling wrote of the event, it was a textbook use of DARVO, a manipulation tactic defined as deny, attack, reverse, victim, and offender. First, the aggressor provokes and antagonizes, then he denies wrongdoing, attacks those who push back, and reframes himself as the persecuted victim. And he says Lang executed it step by step. Now, I also saw many videos of that night in Dearborn, including one that I cannot play here, where one Dearborn resident blames Trump for bringing that kind of hate to Dearborn. He was using some language. I don't mind some swearing, but there's some I can't really play on here. But it's a good video, and I have linked to it wherever you're listening to this podcast. But the resident said that he even voted for Trump, even though he was a Democrat, as did many others in Dearborn. And he said, is this the thanks that we get? Now, I'm going to say this as clearly as possible, all right? I'm not going to hate or ridicule those in Dearborn or Dearborn Heights or in Hamtramck for voting the way they did. Making fun of them and ridiculing them does nothing. And again, it revealed, I think, a failure of Democrats to capture those voters last year. Many of those Arab American voters are learning the same lesson as many others in the working class are learning because we are all of us, we are all working class Americans, all of us. Trump and his regime were never going to fight for the working class. They use certain groups. They use groups to go against each other. They use them just enough so they could win and get into power. They were never going to help the working class. Oh, they'd help themselves while dividing the rest of the working class. Instead, I say let's bring everyone back aboard because we are all the working class, all of us. To illustrate this even more, let's focus on big tech and how it is pushing data centers all across the nation and right here in Michigan. Michigan's Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who continues, by the way, to ignore the press for questions, strange, happily and giddily, though, celebrated her deal to bring in a large data center in Saline Township in Washtenaw County, and it caught many people by surprise, including Michigan Democratic Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, as she said on Tim Skubick's Off the Record show on WKAR last week. Listen.
First of all, I didn't know about any of it. I learned the same day you all did about Oracle and OpenAI, and we knew there was a fight over in Saline, but people weren't talking to us. They weren't giving us the facts. I had a town hall that was actually expected to be complaining about a different data center in Ypsilanti Township when everybody from Saline came, and I really dug into this. I don't ever want to pick up a newspaper again. And again, I'm learning the way everybody else is and see the headlines. Public shouldn't have input into a public process. That's the public has a right to have input about what is going into their community.
Debbie Dingell is responding not only to the news of this data center backed by Oracle, but also how DTE Energy, which stands to do quite well by providing all of the energy for these energy-sucking centers, was pushing state regulators to allow it to provide the energy for this data center without any public input. Because they never want the working class to know what is happening behind the curtain. So what are these data centers all about? Who's backing them? And why are they causing so much controversy in towns across the state? Kelly House from Bridge, Michigan will tell us here in just a moment. You are listening to LOL.
It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need to give Pat a piece of your mind, or do you have some stories you think Pat should cover? Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. And if you have Michigan beer ideas for Pat, he'll love you even more. Now, here's Pat.
All right. Well, many of you heard the issue of data centers come up during my discussion with Livingston County progressive activist Casey Helton last week. And the data center that Casey brought up is happening in Howell Township. And that's where a data center will encompass over 1,000 acres of land that's being backed by an unknown tech giant there. Although the Livingston Post is reporting that it could be Meta. Now, this is stirring up all kinds of controversy and opposition amongst the many residents in that area, residents who most of the time can't really agree on anything, but they are coming together to fight against this data center. But that's not the only data center controversy happening in Michigan. Governor Whitmer recently announced a major data center project for Saline in Washtenaw County that will amass some 28 football fields in that once quiet area. And despite some local pushback by government officials, they eventually backed down to the developer Related Digital that's building this massive complex. Now, this push for these expensive and expansive and environmentally harming data centers is happening and happening fast across Michigan and many other states, and it's making many citizens feel kind of powerless in trying to stop them. I wanted to learn more about these data centers and why we're just suddenly seeing this rise in them that's happening really quick, and why they're being so pushed fiercely by not only big tech, but by political leaders who are hailing this as a way to help the state economically. So I wanted to invite Bridge, Michigan's Kelly House here to the show because Kelly House is the environmental reporter for Bridge, Michigan, which is a nonprofit news source that provides excellent news coverage throughout the state. Kelly, thanks so much for coming on the show this week to talk more about this. I appreciate it.
Hi, thanks for having me.
All right. Well, you've been covering the data center push in Michigan quite extensively, as I said. And one article that you wrote last week titled Tensions Mount as Data Centers Eye Sleepy Michigan Farm Towns. And in the story, you write about this data center in Saline that I mentioned and how it caught many of its residents kind of off guard at first. Can you give everyone just a little bit of background on this data center, how it came about, who's backing it, and why it's happening in Saline?
Yeah, so this would be 1.7 gigawatt facility. And to put that into perspective, that is the energy equivalent of a major city, you know, more than a million homes. It will single-handedly increase demand in DTE Energy's territory by 25% if it's built to the specifications that we've learned of so far. It's a Stargate data center, which is part of a partnership between OpenAI, Oracle, and Related Digital, and it will be a facility that trains AI models. So what that looks like is vast, you know, you mentioned 28 football fields. That's the size of these three buildings. The site itself on which these will sit is hundreds of acres. But there'll be big windowless, warehouse-like buildings filled with computers that run 24/7, training AI for all sorts of uses. This first emerged publicly back in July. And what that looked like really is representatives for the developers just showing up at a township meeting and introducing themselves. And then the next day, they filed an application. There had been whispers in the community that maybe something like this would happen because farmers had already been approached for their land. So one farmer told me he was literally planting soybeans last spring when company officials, you know, rode up in a pickup truck and offered him millions of dollars for his land. Wow. He thought it was a joke at the time. Fast forward to September, local officials rejected this thing. And within a couple of days, the developers had filed a lawsuit. Township officials told me that, you know, given that quick turnaround, they think that probably that lawsuit was waiting in the wings already. The developers sort of knew what their game plan was going to be. And it hinged on the idea of exclusionary zoning. This township has industrial zoning, you know, sort of in its ordinances, but doesn't actually have a property that is set aside for industrial uses. So the developer said, hey, you know, if you have this zoning type, you are required to make way for someone to take advantage of that. And the township, acting on the advice of its attorneys, decided to settle that lawsuit, paving the way for this facility to move forward.
Did the county commission have any say there? That would be Washtenaw County. Did they have any say over this?
Nope, not to my knowledge. These facilities, the land use is the big make or break thing. Can you or can't you get authorization to use the land? And that rests really at the local level. Townships and cities decide that.
And I think maybe the reason why I was wondering if this caught some off guard was that I was watching Tim Skubick's Off the Record show on WKAR over the weekend, and he and the reporters there were interviewing Democratic Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, and that's her district where this data center is going to be built. And she told them that she was learning of the news of this data center just like everyone else, and that it caught her off guard. Would that be possible?
Yes. You know, and I think that's happening across the state. These things sort of bubble up from the local level. They are kept under very tight wraps until the entity behind one wants to come forward. And depending on, you know, the place and the developer involved, that's happened at different stages. There's one example in Kalkaska area, for instance, where a company is floating the idea of a data center, but, you know, they haven't identified, secured any land. They have yet to come to the local government looking for approvals. They're just sort of testing the waters to see if this community would be receptive. Then you have situations like the one in Howell Township, where land has been secured, the township board is considering rezoning. It all has happened within the span of a couple of months, and we still don't know who the tenant of this facility would actually be. So they tend to be kept under very tight wraps until all of the major access to energy and land have been secured, and then these tech giants decide they're going to come forward and put their name on the project.
You mentioned it earlier when you were talking about this Selene project. What exactly will these data centers do? Like, for some who may just hear data center, they hear AI. What does that mean exactly? What is happening? What is actually the goal of these data centers?
So not all are AI.
Okay.
The Michigan's first announced one will be training AI. We don't really have a lot of details, and I don't expect we will get them. about who's contracting with that facility to train AI to do what. But AI could be anything from ChatGPT, which is probably the thing that most of us are familiar with, or Google Chat, you know, where you search on Google and now you get AI answers. But AI powers online banking. It can be used to power businesses, use it to use fewer people to accomplish tasks. There are many uses for AI. Some of these other data centers are literally storing data. You know, if you host a website, that data is stored somewhere. Social media algorithms rely on data center, cloud storage of our photos and videos. So those storage and processing ones are a little bit different from the ones that are doing what this one does, which is take in vast quantities of information and use it to train artificial intelligence that then is used to perform tasks.
Okay, so thank you for clarifying that a bit. But the one in Saline, that will be AI?
Yes, it will.
How many of these data centers or plans for data centers are moving forward in the state? I mean, I don't know if you can tell me, give me a number right at the top of your head, but is there like a figure that you can come up with?
Yeah, it is very difficult, if not impossible, to get a concrete number. There isn't a central tracking repository for these things where data centers have to like announce themselves. But I have just done a rough survey of places where these proposals have become public. And I've come up with, we're talking about hyperscale, the really big data centers. There are no fewer than 9 proposals ongoing in Michigan. You know, the trouble is I'm getting a lot of this information from local media that covers the township board in whatever small community. And so I do wonder if there are proposals out there that maybe have yet to become widely publicly known, but that are being floated. Then on top of that, you can get some 5,000 foot view from the state's major utilities, because they play a huge role in data center development, in that data centers need tons of energy. We're starting to see some public information revealed from utilities as they start to talk with energy regulators about how they're going to meet all of this demand. And I'll just look, I have a spreadsheet going, so bear with me for a second.
Oh, no problem.
Consumers Energy, they say that they are anticipating 2.65 gigawatts of data center demand by 2035 in their service area. Right now, they have none of these large data centers. And they are already in advanced talks with 3 proposed data centers that would equate to 2 gigawatts. DTE, of course, they now have the deal for the Stargate data center. They also say that they are in advanced talks for another 3 gigawatts worth of data center demand. That, you know, if you're talking about a gigawatt, gigawatt and a half per data center, that comes out to maybe 4 or 5 data centers that are in advanced talks with the utilities that would be servicing them. And if all of that materializes, that is a huge increase in the power demand on Michigan's electricity sector. I did the math, and between the two, it would raise electricity demand in the state by something like 25% over peak load right now. And mind you, peak load is already like the most load that these two utilities would be delivering at any one time.
And I want to talk more about the utilities here in just a moment, but thanks for bringing it up. I just wanted to go back real quick. Michigan, Kelly, it kind of made itself available for these data center projects, thanks in large part to the Michigan State Legislature last year passing these tax breaks and incentives to entice these tech companies to build these centers here. Is that correct?
That's correct. And that was a big political battle in and of itself. There was bipartisan support and bipartisan opposition to that legislation. It did ultimately pass. It gives data centers exemption from the state's sales and use tax. Data center proponents would say, hey, that's just putting us on the same ground that, you know, big manufacturers are on or farmers are on. You know, when a farmer buys a tractor, that's not subject to sales and use tax. When a big factory buys new equipment, nor is that. So data center developers would argue that. Opponents argued, these are some of the wealthiest companies in the world. They need to put these things somewhere. They will eventually come to Michigan, whether or not we exempt them from these taxes. And then on top of that, there were people who, you know, simply said, we don't want to roll out the red carpet for data centers in Michigan, who are concerned about the water use, who are concerned about the electricity use, the fear that it could supercharge climate change and doom the climate goals that Michigan legislators had just written into law a year prior.
And this happened during the lame duck session, too.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it was debated throughout the year, but yep, this was passed during lame duck.
And like you said, too, I mean, they had bipartisan support, but bipartisan opposition, because I was also remembering that there were many. I mean, you have some Democrats, progressive Democrats, and you have some Republicans in the state legislature who were already by then saying they wanted to change the corporate tax subsidies programs that many of you over at Bridge Michigan have reported hasn't really created all of the jobs that were promised. So that's where some of the opposition was coming from, right? That people were saying, wait a second, I thought we wanted to kind of change this, and yet we're doing the same thing here for these tech companies.
Exactly. And my colleague Paula Gardner has done tons of, you know, scrutinizing the actual outcomes of various subsidies for industries in Michigan. And what she's found is that frequently they have not lived up to their end of the promise. And I've done some looking into that. When this bill was being deliberated, I looked into that with one of the major data centers that Michigan did have, which is far smaller than the ones we're talking about now, but, you know, big for Michigan up until today. And that's the Switch Data Center over near Grand Rapids. That one had already been granted exemptions to sales and use tax. The developers made these promises about hundreds of jobs, public promises. And then by the time those were memorialized on paper, it was a much smaller promise to begin with. And then by the time the deadline to create those jobs rolled around, Switch had created like a fifth of what they even promised on paper. So there were concerns around what's going to happen when we're giving away more of this money to these massive data center companies, when we already have seen in hindsight that companies did not maintain their end of the bargain. And I talked with the sponsors of these new tax breaks about that. And they said, you know, hey, this new law acknowledges that data centers are not really major job creators, but that they felt the tax breaks were still justified because the industry, even after receiving a lot of exemptions and reductions on their tax bill, would become a huge taxpayer in the community that they set up shop in, you know, that they'll be paying property taxes and fueling local budgets. And that appears to be true. I mean, granted, the ground has not broken on this proposed data center in Saline Township. It's not a done deal. But they've run the numbers and they have said, even after getting the state sales and use tax exemption and getting a 50% reduction on local property taxes, they still expect to be infusing millions of dollars of tax revenue into local schools and government and really single-handedly boosting the township's property tax base, I think, four times what it is today. The counterpoint to that from opponents is, were these taxes needed, or would they have been needed if we didn't, you know, expand roads and sort of prepare the community to accept a data center, which then creates, you know, lots of services that need to be maintained with tax dollars.
And it changes like the entire landscape of these communities too. Yeah. Okay. Well, getting back, you know, to the utilities, and I like to just kind of focus on the environment here real quick. You know, Michigan Democrats, as you know, Kelly, Michigan Democrats and Governor Whitmer, you know, they celebrated that environmental and clean jobs bill back in 2023, in which the state would become carbon neutral, I think, by 2040. But there is this loophole in the bill, right, that if energy demand in the state increases in a big way, then utilities can continue to use fossil fuel to meet those energy demands. Now, DTE, as you have already talked about, is backing this project in Saline and stands to be the beneficiary, obviously. Is that true from your understanding, that if the energy demand increases, DTE and utilities will be allowed to continue to draw from fossil fuels, thereby, I mean, I would guess, undermining maybe the law's original purpose?
Well, it's not a cut and dry, if demand increases, utilities can get out of their obligations. It's a little more nuanced than that, in that if they can show good cause for why they're unable to meet the requirements of the law, they can get these extensions. People have referred to them as off-ramps. So, you know, the utilities would have to do some explaining. They couldn't just say, oh, demand went up, therefore we're not subject to the law. So far, DTE and consumers both claim that they can absorb the data center demand that they're projecting while still meeting the terms of the climate law. Now, neither of them has really offered much more explanation about how they plan to do that. In order to do that, they would obviously need to build more renewable energy arrays or buy credits on the open market, or, you know, find some other way. And we know that building renewable energy has been tough too. There are barriers connected to logistics of just trying to add all that load to the grid and finding places in the grid that can take it on. And then, of course, there have been knockdown, drag-out political fights all over the country in communities that maybe don't want farm fields to be converted for this use. So big questions down the line about how you actually meet that energy demand if it truly materializes. But then on the flip side of that, there is the question about whether that demand will actually materialize. And you just saw, so Consumers Energy was the first utility out the gate in Michigan to propose sort of how it plans to deal with selling power to these massive new users that are sort of unprecedented in their size. And part of their argument to regulators was, hey, these are facilities that, you know, because they have very few jobs, because they're in an industry that's evolving, could very easily ask us to make huge investments to serve them and then pull up the stakes and leave prematurely. And there's also fear of an AI or data center bubble where maybe demand fails to materialize. So what Consumers did was ask the state, and ultimately they got clearance to do this, to be able to lock into long-term contracts with data center developers that require them to continue purchasing large amounts of power, predictable amounts of power. They couldn't dramatically ratchet down their demand, you know, 5 years later. And then if they do, they will still have to pay what their contract specified. So that's one attempt to sort of manage the flip side of the data center fear, which is that they really never materialized, but Michigan has made a bunch of investments to pave the way for them in the interim.
You mentioned the bubble burst, because I think I'm seeing right now that the stock market is tumbling here today because of fears of an AI bubble burst and all that. So, yeah, I just wanted to ask you real quick, where do we stand with that Selene project and DTE? Did I read that at a part where the state regulators, they want to hear from the public first?
Yeah, that just came out today. So DTE, just in case listeners haven't been following, DTE took a very different track from Consumers. They want, rather than setting sort of blanket regulations, they want to do one-off contracts with individual data center developers. And they had asked state regulators, essentially, hey, please approve this without including the public or holding hearings. We want you to do it fast. And, you know, we think that there's no need for hearings. So what happened today is the MPSC, Michigan Public Service Commission, said, no, we're going to have a public hearing. What still isn't clear is whether the Public Service Commission will open what's called a contested case. And that would be a more robust level of review that allows interested parties on all sides, it, you know, functions like a court case. They can present their evidence. They can try to sway the decision makers about what they think the outcome of this contract issue should be. So we're still waiting to hear whether or not that will take place.
Okay. And finally, this isn't just a Michigan issue. I mean, we're seeing similar fights happening throughout the country, right?
Yeah, we are. I was just talking with a data center industry official today who said that they could build a data center a week and still be behind on demand. So these companies are sort of fanning out everywhere they can and trying to be the first ones to scoop up the easy land and easy access to electricity. So it's moving really fast. And I think that is where one of many reasons why you see a lot of controversy around this, because communities feel like they're only beginning to wrap their heads around the existence of this technology and these facilities. And then next thing they know it, one is in their town and it's an inch away from approval.
Kelly House, environmental reporter for Bridge Michigan, one of my favorite news sites anywhere. Thanks so much for all of your hard work on reporting on this story, and also for all of your reporting when it comes to environmental issues around Michigan. Listen, this is a story that's not going to go away anytime soon. So please, I'd love to have you back again to talk more about this, because I have a little hunch it'll still stick in the news here somewhat for a while.
I think you're right on that. Thanks for having me, Pat.
He spent nearly 25 years working as a liberal voice in conservative talk radio across the state, and he's still a somewhat stable person. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. You can find archives of the podcast, plus Pat's musings on other topics in written form at leftoflansing.com. Left of Lansing archives are available wherever you get your podcasts. And now Left of Lansing is available on YouTube. We'd like to thank Audioboom for distributing all our episodes so we can share progressive, otherwise known as common sense, values across Michigan and the country. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
Hey, special thanks to Kelly House from Bridge, Michigan for being on the show this week. I'll provide links to Kelly's data center stories and also to her bio page at Bridge, Michigan. And check out all of the other terrific work they do at Bridge, Michigan. You heard Kelly bring up her colleague, Paula Gardner, who's been on this show for a couple of times to talk about her findings on how the big corporate incentives, or handouts, as I call them here in Michigan, haven't really created all the jobs that were promised to all of us. And I'm afraid that's not going to happen here when it comes to these data centers, not to mention the environmental impacts, the detrimental environmental impacts these data centers will cause to so many communities throughout the state. And that's part of what I'd like to cover in my last call for this week. Again, I am appreciative for Kelly House's reporting on data centers because she was able to add some more information and to help add more color to this picture. For instance, you know, she brought up how there's no guarantee that we'd get enough clean energy in the state to provide energy for these data centers, since so many communities are fighting against clean energy farms as well. And okay, I understand that. That's the truth. With the difficulty of the unknown when it comes to farmers today, especially with Trump's tariff insanity, it is somewhat understandable to me why some farmers are willing to sell their land for the amount of cash that these tech firms are giving them. I mean, this will take care of their family for at least two, maybe even three generations. But I am sorry, I don't see the benefit of these data centers, since they'll lead to water depletion, more fossil fuel in our air to power these centers, light pollution, and yes, AI technology that'll make jobs disappear. They're asking taxpayers to help them form these centers, some of them that are AI concentrated, that will end up taking away Michiganders' jobs. And what I don't get is how we are witnessing these gigantic tech companies finding ways with their algorithms to share the news they want the public to see, and how they're also joining forces with authoritarianism to gain more power and more wealth over the people. Yet, there we are, granting these same companies massive tax breaks and also our environmental treasure. Won't they eventually come to Michigan without this welfare? I mean, if this is such a boon, why do they need our money? They'll just come here anyway. And then there's DTE, who tried to fast track this Selene data center for Oracle because, when in doubt, try to do everything behind the people's backs. Yeah, that seems like a real sound strategy always. That's what's got the working class here in Michigan in such a frenzy in so many different towns, so many different areas around the state. It's how this is all being done behind our backs, or a lot of it is being done behind our backs, and we don't get much of a say. And what's even more scary is that AI is powering this nation's economy right now, and that is not a good sign. And then there's this, a little bit of news here from Keely Quinlan from State Scoop, and this is what the story says. Republican Representative Steve Scalise, the House Majority Leader from Louisiana, told Punchbowl News on Monday that the House GOP leaders are shopping language that would reintroduce a ban on enforcement of state AI laws as they work on the 2026 National Defense Authorization Act. Lawmakers are set to finalize the bill, and this renewed effort to put a stopgap on state laws follows a failed attempt this year when the Senate eventually voted 99-1 to remove a provision included in a broader budget reconciliation bill, President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill, the MAGA murder budget, that would have established a 10-year ban on state and local regulation of AI. MAGA voters don't want this. Progressive voters don't want this. What the hell happened to state control? Are those days gone? And because I'm fair on this podcast, I have to mention one more little bombshell of a story that broke in Michigan Advance. Ben Solis reports Ryan Friedrichs, a vice president for the company pushing the controversial AI data center project in Saline Township, and the husband of Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, would recuse himself from any projects before the state if Benson is elected governor 2026. That said, the company stopped short of saying that Friedrichs would leave his post at the company, which is owned by one of Benson's largest donors. Huh. So we've got Jocelyn Benson trying to become the Democratic nominee for governor next year. We've got MAGA Republican Congressman John James trying to become the Republican nominee for governor next year. Both could be major supporters and beneficiaries of data centers. Who stands to benefit and who stands to get left behind? I think we all know the answer to that question.
listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Left of Lansing. Special thanks again to Kelly House from Bridge, Michigan for joining me here this week. And I wanted to bring this bit of campaign news before I forget. I don't know if you saw, but former Michigan Democratic Congressman Andy Levin is endorsing Progressive Democratic Senate candidate Dr. Abdul El-Sayed. And I'm not sure how much endorsements really matter anymore, but the doctor has been picking up some rather big names lately. So keep your eye on that Michigan Democratic Senate race. I haven't yet decided if I will provide an episode next week with it being Thanksgiving and all, but regardless, I will still provide the Monday musing and Friday short. If we don't talk next week, please have a safe and relaxing Thanksgiving Day holiday. And please, 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 Detroit Lions, win this week and then win again on Thanksgiving Day against those Packers. I'm starting to get a little nervous that you're going to miss the playoffs. Playoffs! Until next time, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.